OG fire?
The fire OG.
This show is brought to you by Indochino. They are reinventing men's fashion and have a deal too good to pass up. Right now, our listeners get any premium suit for just $3.99. That's up to 50% off at Indochino.com when you enter promo code CHURCH at checkout. Plus, shipping is free. That's Indochino.com. Enter CHURCH at checkout and shipping is free. The show is also brought to you by MeUndies. Go to MeUndies.com/Joey right now to save 20% off of your first order. And shipping is always free in the U.S. and Canada. And you can save up to $8 a pair with the MeUndies subscription plan. MeUndies makes the most comfortable underwear in the world. It's MeUndies.com/Joey to save 20% off of your first order. And go to Onnit.com and use code word CHURCH to save 10% off all their amazing optimization products like Alpha Brain, New Mood, Shroom Tech Immune, and Shroom Tech Sport.
Kick that fucking muley. It's Monday night, cocksucker. Little Spanish music for you fuckers there. Get your fueled up. Go, Lee. Let me see you do a little wiggle. Oh, shit. The church of what's happening now, Monday, July 18th, the day the devil was buried at sea. We got Uncle Ed Suarez, we got Lee Syatt, the Flying Jew. Go, Lee, kick that motherfucker, Lee.
I'm great sitting down.
This is a fucking jam. I'm telling you, this is too much. These are Puerto Ricans at their best right here. What's going on, Tarzan? Good to have you on here.
Thanks for having me.
It's good to see you. I haven't seen you in a while.
Yeah, yeah.
Ed Suarez, manager of the year. 2 years in a row and shit, the UFC. What are you, fucking nuts? Hall of Famer. What's happening?
Oh, man, just on the grind, man. Been working a lot. A lot of stuff going on. A lot of stuff. All good stuff, man. You know, it's a lot of good stuff.
It's funny because whenever I call you, it's because I think about like 5 years ago, we went to a weigh-in, maybe 6 years ago in a weigh-in. And after the weigh-in, there was a comedy show.
Yeah.
And after the comedy show, you were like the last man standing. And you and I walked around the casino. We don't do nothing. We don't bother nobody.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what are you going to do? And you're like, nothing. I'm going to go up to my room. Anderson's sleeping. The other guy's sleeping. I go, fuck it. Come up to the room. Let's go on a computer, whatever. We came into the room. I think we ate some cashews. And we got to a conversation about fatherhood.
Yeah.
And you just were just telling me about, you know, that your life is this MMA stuff. But your life, your two girls, like you just went off on the two girls and you like going to Colorado and going skiing. And that's when I think about my memories in Colorado all those years, I think about going to ski at 9:30 in the morning, going to like a mid-level range.
Yeah.
And the first run of the day, you know, you're like, let's see what happens. And all of a sudden something happens, your timing is off and you end up falling down. And as you're wiping the snow off you and picking up your pole, you look to your right, and there's 16 kids coming down, one bumping each other, Lee, and they're doing 90 miles an hour with a fucking instructor next to them. And they're like, geez, and you're like, I feel like such a fucking loser right now. You know what I'm saying? These little kids, you know, and then you figure out that they're center of gravity and all
this. Oh, yeah.
But you were just telling me all this, and at that time, let me tell you something. I was just starting to get my life together. Me and my wife had just gotten married. You know, I was older. I wasn't thinking of kids whatsoever. I'm looking at you, and I'm like, finally, I bump into a parent that's genuinely happy.
Yeah.
That he put his time in for the daughters, and now it's blossoming. You know what I'm saying? And I always think of that. And all of a sudden, one day, my wife tells me she's pregnant. And all of a sudden, my wife tells me she's having a little girl. And all of a sudden, boom, this little fucking girl pops out. And you, as a gorilla, don't know how to really act around this little princess, but you have to go down to her level. You have to. So part of my day now is comedy, and I love doing comedy and shit. I love doing the podcast. And I like going to meetings. But the other part of my day is being a dad to this little future fucking monster. You know what I'm saying? That I'm trying to create. You know, and you have to put the time in. I walk her to school. I make sure I'm there to pick her up from school. Just little things. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. That's what makes the difference. At night, I like to go in there and talk to her in Spanish and tell her God's watching her and all this shit. Don't fuck around in here tonight. You know, God's watching this shit.
I mean, do you really?
Yeah, man, it means the world to me. I go in and I say, after her mother reads the book and the whole thing, I give it like a half hour. I hear her in there throwing shit and fucking having a one-woman show and talking to herself and shit. So I go in there, she makes believe she's asleep. And I wait a minute and I go, where's Mercy? And I don't hear nothing. And all I got to do is give it a minute and she'll giggle by herself. Like she starts giggling and I just start talking to her in English. And I just talk to her in Spanish. And that's it. On the way out, I go, I got to go to work. And then on the way out, no matter how much I try to talk to her, she won't say nothing to me. But on the way out the door, she'll say, I love you too, Daddy. That's all you need. That's as good as it gets when you have a daughter. Yeah. That's as good as the world fucking gets.
Oh, yeah.
So I seldom think of you when I'm getting my fatherly, I don't know what you call it. It's like a bliss. Like you get a moment.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's great. It's you'll have a lot of those moments, you know. I mean, I could tell you the most recent moment was dropping the oldest one off at college, man. That was one of the hardest things I ever had to do in my life, man. I didn't think it was going to be that big of a deal. I travel all the time, no big deal. But then, you know, we drive to Colorado. We had a great time. We went river rafting. We stayed in Vail, her and I, and then dropped her off. And then, you know, my daughter and my wife's mom stayed there, and I was just like, you know what, the drive was so good coming back from driving in. I said, you know what, I'm just going to drive the car back because we were just going to ship the car back. So then I'd take the car, and so I was going to leave a day earlier, and then the night we were going to leave her at the college, man. You know, I thinking, you know, I travel all the time, I'm always away, but realizing that you're leaving your daughter at school was heavy, man. That was a heavy
fucking college.
Yeah, college. She's starting her sophomore year now in college.
And once your head explodes.
Yeah.
Because you see them that little young. I'm seeing people on Facebook that I knew on my block that were little kids.
Yeah.
One kid in particular used to have a dog and he used to throw rocks and the dog would pick up the fucking rocks. He had no teeth left. Now he's like a dentist in Florida, the fucking guy. But it's as a dad, like, yeah, you got it. You can have a son and they can be dirty and they can throw rocks and shit and break windows and be the toughest kid on the block. And yeah, you get some little respect from that shit as a dad, you know, to have a wild little boy. But there's nothing like having a little girl to fucking pull back your reins and make you really sit down and go, Jesus.
Yeah.
Jesus, what the fuck did I get into? It's like I told you earlier. I don't know if it's the antibiotics or the reefer I smoked with Lee in the afternoon. I had to go home and take a nap, dog.
Yeah.
And my wife came in. She goes, do you want to eat? My wife didn't even know there was a podcast tonight. If she wouldn't have woke me up, I would have still been fucking passed out. And my wife opened the door. And she goes, do you want to eat? And I go, yeah, I'll be right in there. And as my wife turned her back, Mercy slipped right behind her in the cutest little fucking dress. And she just started talking to me. And she wouldn't shut the fuck up. She just wouldn't. She just kept looking me in the eye and telling me the story, like all enthusiastic, like, yeah, and the Chinese dude and all this shit. And I'm like, what are you saying? You know? And then they say, come follow me, Daddy. Nobody's ever told me to follow them. And 9 out of 10 times, I ain't going to fucking follow you, okay?
Yeah.
When she tells me, follow me, Daddy, I can't fucking be right. You're right there. You're right there. You're a foot behind that attention because I know I don't want to even get the wrath of that shit.
That's, yeah. You know, your kids will make you do things you never thought you would do.
I used to do those Christmas movies with Dean Cain, and he wouldn't shut the fuck up about his kid. And I'd want to fucking strangle him. Like, I'm like Superman. I want to fucking strangle you. He wouldn't shut the fuck up about his boy. He was telling me, you know, he'd take the gum out of his kid's mouth and put it in his fucking mouth and just do crazy shit. You know what I'm saying? Like, at night, he'd ask the kid, did you brush your teeth? Yeah, then why do you have gum in your mouth? Give me the fucking gum. And he, you know, just, and he'd go, you know, you do anything for your child. And you see all these TV shows and you see all these parental dilemmas. And you really, really, really can't make a judgment call until you have children. Like, I didn't know that. I thought that you could intervene, like you were an expert on parenting. You know dick. Yeah, so that child's in front of you.
Yeah, they don't come with a manual.
Yeah, you have views on how to raise a child from how you were raised and how you don't want to be raised and what things you took from your parents to raise your child. But at the same time, it doesn't come into effect. Like a couple weeks ago, the bear with the fucking kid. Your thought process is completely different. The gorilla who Chicago, whatever, threw the fucking kid.
Yeah, where they grabbed the kid.
When you're 19 and somebody tells you about a three-year-old falling in a fucking thing with a gorilla, when you're 19, that's like talking about, you know, Aristophanes. Like, I don't give a fuck. Like, shoot the fucking kid. Whatever you would say, that's stupidity, you know? But your whole thing, perspective changes when it's about a child. Yeah,
of course.
What was I watching yesterday?
I mean, it's horrible that they had to kill the gorilla, but what are you going to do? Not do, you know what I mean?
Well, you know, nobody wins in that situation, but just the perspective of it. You really can't, you think, you sit there for a second and go, I go to the LA Zoo.
Yeah.
What if my fucking daughter falls into the fucking moat, whatever the hell they call it, and that gorilla picks her up?
Right. And then people are saying, like, you know, then the parent should have been more, you know, paying attention. But then again, it's like, I mean, it's not the kid's fault.
Listen, man, again, you're sitting. Well, the problem that we have, and I've been talking about it on stage in today's society, is that fucking cell phone.
Yeah.
You know. 9 out of 10, when something happens with your child, what's your first reaction? I turn my back for a minute.
Yeah.
Well, now you're turning your back for 8 minutes a day because you're looking at that fucking meme they put up about Clinton's wife or, you know, a picture of McGregor crying. One of your friends sends you that. And while you're going to look at that stupid fucking meme, a pit bull flies out of a fucking tree when you're in a park.
Yeah.
There's so many little things that you know, there's so many little things.
Yeah.
So when you have a, you can't, you're with your children. You got a fucking zoo. All right? And all of a sudden you have a child in the stroller and you have a 3-year-old. And he has a little doll in his hand that Superman, whatever, with a fucking cape. And he walks over to look at the gorilla and he falls over. You think as a parent he's going to be safe. That's not even going to happen in your world.
Right.
But at the same time, while he's walking over there, I call from fucking Chicago to say my plane's delayed. And she picks up the fucking phone. Whatever. There's so many different things that can happen.
Yeah.
So as a parent, you look at that situation a lot differently. That's the perspective that I've been feeding. The last couple of years, I look at my jokes differently now.
Well, because whenever I'm with you guys and with Mercy, I'm really, like, I always look at her. And not that you guys aren't paying attention, but you guys don't seem as worried as I do. So do you think maybe, like, at a certain point, parents kind of get, like, not lazy, but, like...
Not lazy, but you just trust the environment.
Right.
You know, when you come over, we're in the fucking apartment, we're inside the fence. Somebody has to come jump the fucking fence if they want any problems.
Or, like, the food, or, like, if we're out in the park or something. Or.
Right. When I'm in the park with her, I have my eye on her.
Yeah.
I look at the surrounding areas, and I have my eye on her. I have my eye on the street, you know. First off, I see the move coming 10 minutes before anybody in Studio City will see the fucking move coming. All right? I see the move coming. Yeah. I see the setup, the whole fucking thing. Yeah. I see the whole... A year ago, my wife came home, and she's telling the story about a horrible situation that happened at some park in Van Nuys, that the fucking... the parents were divorced or some shit, and they couldn't see the kid, the parent... The father couldn't see the child, so they were at the park. So some kid all of a sudden started puking. The parents went to help that kid, and the father fell out of a tree and snatched the kid and started running away. And I go, you fell for the fucking... The kid started having an epileptic fit. And I told my wife, you fell for the Alka-Seltzer trick. They paid that kid $20 to eat Alka-Seltzer and throw your attention off. Then the kid's father ran and took the fucking kid at the park. This is a true story. I'm not making this shit up. And I go, you know, again, this is, I go, what did you do? And my wife's like, I ran over to the fucking kid. I go, you fell for the Alka-Seltzer and the mouth fucking routine. I go, you want to run over to that kid, you got to grab Mercy by the fucking neck and run over there. If not, they're going to snatch your fucking child. Are you with me?
Yeah, yeah, I'm totally.
You know, you got to watch your fucking kid, man.
I can't remember where it was, but there was a kid at a daycare who went to a park, and the daycare just forgot about him. They miscount, and he was, like, just wandering around the park. Like, how can, like, that happen? Like,
well, I mean.
Dog, I went from Jersey to Philadelphia to watch the Nutcracker Suite and to go to Betsy Ross's fucking house in high school on a bus. And then if we behaved ourselves, they took us to Callahan's for fucking hamburgers and french fries and the Yoo-Hoo and shit. Okay, let me explain something to you. Number one, I wouldn't want my mom on that trip. And number two, in those days, I don't think my mom would want to be on that trip. I think of my daughter going on field trips, and the first thing I think of is I'm on that bus with those fucking kids.
Yeah.
Or in the car behind them, three cars behind us with two fucking gorillas in the car.
It's not even official. You're just there.
Listen to Snoop Dogg. Oh, yeah, I got my eye on you, dog.
Mr. Diaz, are you a chaperone? No, I'm just here.
I just can't imagine. I just don't see it in my world. I don't see how right now in 14 years I'm going to fucking send her to a summer camp.
Yeah,
for 6 weeks to learn how to play the piano. I can't. Not in today's fucking world.
You know, I was lucky because, you know, Lynn, my wife, was always there to, you know, participate in all that stuff. While I was out grinding, she was there, you know, able to do some of that stuff. So I definitely know Lynn was doing it a lot more than I was.
I'm not laughing at the story. I'm laughing because you're not talking into the microphone.
No, I'm not talking into the
mic. There's two things that give Lee anxiety. If first of all, Lee's Jewish. If he goes to the ATM and it's not working, he has anxiety. That's number one.
You got to talk into the mic. Okay.
Lee smokes pot and they put on like Black Sabbath or The Cars or something, he gets anxiety. Yeah. And the other time when he gets anxiety is when people are talking to the microphone.
All right, you all right now?
You see him jiggling and shit.
I thought he was having a seizure.
Then he figures out, he goes to the mixer and he tries to figure out how to get your voice. That's the new game. When people come on, we're going to listen after about 3 minutes.
You got to tell them about after two lines, just start talking to the mic and watch Lee.
Watch Lee go fucking bananas.
That's so mean. Oh, my God. That would drive me nuts.
Oh, my God. Every time I can see that something's not right. By his body movement, I can see that something ain't fucking right, though.
Oh, my God.
Oh. Lee got shell shocked this afternoon, by the way.
Yeah.
You have the video for them?
Yeah, sure.
Play the video for Ed Suarez, the coach. Lee got shell shocked this afternoon. Like I said, we came over here today to meet Aaron from Obsession Labs. He brought us some vapors to try out and whatnot. So it was mid afternoon. I had meetings. I did a little kettlebell workout. You know, I hadn't done no weights in a week because you can't lift weights with the fucking stitches in your nose.
Right.
So today I said, it's a nice day out. Let me go outside and get some vitamin D. And so I meet him here over here with our friend John Salami. We're hanging out over here. We're hanging out over here. And all of a sudden, we decide to do a few bong hits.
All of a sudden, we decide. You would have decided that long ago.
Stop it. So we're sitting here minding our own business.
Let's see this.
And Lee gets jazzed up. He does a bong hit. You got to see. This is the bong of the week. Okay? Watch this. This is as good as... Where you going, Lee? You're going 20 different pages here. You look at this poor kid, what happened this afternoon. He's as tough as nails. Listen, I picked this kid out of the fucking choir. You understand me? This kid smoked pot one time out of a can. He became the producer of the show, and he became a fucking savage. Lee, what's going on here? You're hitting all these buttons. You're making me nervous. Don't make me get out to speak off the microphone again and shit. This is one of the best bong hits of all time. Poor Lee, he's in training. He's in the third week of camp right now.
Can't hear it, though.
Oh, because there's not much audio.
Look at those eyebrows.
Look at it.
Now, we've been doing a breathing technique called Dr. Belize's breathing technique. Okay. Look at the exhale, right? Now, that's the first. fuck, what's this? This is what's in the stomach right here, right now. Look at this face. He gets a head kick and boom, the last. Oh my god. He's drooling everything.
He's looking like a bull massive right there.
Right there, he was like Marlon Brando in Apocalypse Now. Oh my god, Billy. Boy, he's just tougher than fucking nails. Look at him.
Oh, he's got slobber.
That's like Roy Nelson.
He's got slobber. Oh my god.
Listen, High Times is going to get a hold of this, Lee, and you're going to be the bong hit winner of the fucking year. Oh my god. Oh, Jaleesa, yeah, you make me laugh so fucking much.
That's pretty much it.
And the spit at the end was the icing on the cake. It's like 30 seconds later, he spit.
That shit expanded on his lungs, and it just kept going. I've been there where you just take a good hit of something in high altitude, like in Colorado. You take a hit out of that fucking reefer sometimes, and all of a sudden it just expands in your lungs. You get chills and shit. Your bones get wet. I got to tell you something, man. When I heard Anderson was fighting the last fight, I got excited because I know what it's like to get like a Cinderella story. And in my heart, I thought he had a fucking tremendous chance. Like, I really fucking did, man.
I did, too. I believed it, too, you know. I believe that when Anderson was happy, he was happy and excited about fighting.
He was fucking loose.
He was loose, excited, happy to fight. And when he's like that, I think he's very, very dangerous. I think he's a dangerous fight for anybody. You know, when he's feeling like that, and I think he's a dangerous fight. He could be a dangerous fight for anybody.
He was so relaxed, and I kept thinking about stand-up comedy, how the more relaxed you are before you go on stage, the better you'll do.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah. When you're unconscious is the best that you'll do. You know, that's what I call it, a state of being unconscious. I used to sell shit on the phones. In the mid-90s, when I got into comedy, I used to sell sports information on the phones. And I would have my best Saturdays and Sundays are your best days. You have college football, NFL. And the best days on paper were the days that I stayed up till 6 in the morning doing blow and not sleeping. When I'd go in there at 7, I'd go in there coming down off battery acid. But from 7 to 12, I didn't really know what I was saying. So I would go back to basics. I would read the script. I would go back to basics. And it's just the same way with comedy, the same way with fighting. So if you're a fighter, and I'm thinking about, you know what? Daniel Cormier has a great right hook or great, left hook and a great takedown. I'm just saying off the top of my head. And if you go in there worrying about that, guess what? You're going to get taken down. And you're going to get hit with that hook because you're too worried about it. But if you go in there and you don't think about it, I used to go on stage, and before I go on stage, I look at the audience. 10 years ago, if I saw somebody with white hair in the audience, I would shit my pants. So I would worry about that one couple that were 15 years older than the rest of the crowd. I really would. I would worry about them, and I would go out there and bomb because I was worried about them. So the same thing happens when you fight. When you go into a fight, I'm going to tell you who went into a fucking fight and really you could see that the fight was won off drilling. When Holly Holmes beat Ronda Rousey.
Yeah.
You know, they put her in those positions 1,000 times. Every time you feel that hip, grabbing the hip, you drop the hips. Yeah. The next thing. All those little things were drilled in your mind because she did them perfect every time. So she cleansed her mind of all of her fears, of all of anything that what's her name?
It was like she had an answer for.
It's like she had an answer for.
She had an answer for.
When you worry about that shit is when you get taken down.
Yeah. Totally.
And it doesn't make sense, but it makes sense as a comedian. And then when I see it happen, I see that it happened. It crosses over into all the other arts.
Right.
When you go up on that stage, when I go up on that stage, those nights when I go out of the store with you, and on the way down Laurel Canyon, we eat fucking three stars, and we're giggling, and we're beeping at people walking down Laurel Canyon. By the time I make in there, I'm loose already. The place is sold out. I have nothing to worry about. I'm at the Comedy Store. The guy in front of me just killed. If I go up there thinking about the guy in front of me killing, I'm going to die. So as soon as my foot hits, my right foot hits that fucking stage, I don't even think about that motherfucker. If I go up there and acknowledge that guy and let the audience acknowledge him, I will lose that fucking round. But if I go up there like a steamroller, how you see me go up at the Comedy Store, and not give a fuck if Jesus brought me up. Like, I don't give a fuck if Jesus brought me up. If Jesus just ended this show with a magic trick and shot himself, it doesn't matter. I'm still going to rip this fucking room apart. You understand me? That's when you're the most effective as an artist. Right. I just felt that. And that night, I could see he was very loose. He didn't fuck around. His kicks were flowing. You know what I'm saying?
And he didn't, you know, he was smart. He didn't fight the takedown. He, you know, he went down there and showed probably one of the best defensive guards anybody's ever shown in mixed martial arts. I mean, to have Dan Cormier being 30 pounds heavier than you on top of you for three rounds, and Anderson, you know, yeah, he got hit a few times, but pretty much he walked away, you know, little bumps and bruises, nothing too major in comparison to what Dan Cormier has been able to do at heavyweight and to other people. Anderson's a middleweight.
The weird thing was, I was watching it with a 10th Planet student, and the 10th Planet kept going, lockdown, lockdown. Right now, you sweep into an electric chair. I'm like, listen, first of all, that's a dude that's 20 pounds heavier, and he's an Olympic fucking wrestler.
He's an Olympic wrestler.
You ain't sweeping that fucking dude. Anderson's lucky to have him where he has him and control him. He's got him.
None of that, man.
No, there was none of that. People just didn't really understand.
This was a fight. You know what I mean?
He really held him and controlled him. Like, yeah. I said, he took a couple shots, but he didn't mount him. He could have mounted him and fucking beat the fuck out of him. And that's where I'm a firm believer at the end, when I'm looking at a fight, the last thing I look at is how many years experience he has as a jiu-jitsu guy. Do you know that?
Really?
I swear to God. I look at that as the highest. I think of something. I think about something that was very interesting. In the press conference they did in Torrance or Redondo Beach at the fucking UFC gym where Diaz showed up with McGregor. Right. What was McGregor saying to Nate Diaz? Does anybody remember what he was saying to him? Look at you. You do magic tricks with
teaching
your left
seminars.
Hand. Teaching kids jiu-jitsu on Sunday class.
Yeah.
Are you fucking kidding me? Just that statement came back to haunt him. Right. I knew right there that statement was a mistake. He didn't see how bad of a statement that was when he made it. I respect. My two respects as a wrestler and a jiu-jitsu guy. Listen, we've been all striking since we were fucking two. There's sensational strikers, but in the UFC, Gonzaga hits you with a good punch. I don't give a fuck who you are. You're going to have brain damage like Cyborg. You're going to have a headache for two fucking weeks.
Right. That was crazy.
That's the strength of where we're going now. That's going to be the next level. We're going to start caving fucking heads. The audience is going to love it. The audience is going to love it. Fucking this guy's brain got hit. Like, they're going to love it. That's the first of many. But what the fuck were we talking about? I have no idea. You see what happens when you smoke this marijuana? I'm over here smoking dope with Lee at 2 in the afternoon. Lee's looking at me. He don't know what the fuck I'm talking about.
I have no idea what it's. No, but going back to what you were saying.
No, about the jiu-jitsu.
Okay.
I swear to God, Lee, because I know ever since I joined jiu-jitsu, I see how good the black belts are, especially when I used to get on top of guys in the beginning and I'd see what they do to me. within 3 minutes, they figured out a way to get me off of them. And they'd say, drop your weight, drop your hips on my shoulder, go, go, go. And I could hear them going, I could hear them under me going, breathing heavy. And I'm like, are you okay? Come on, we don't need to do this. No, 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 just give me a minute. And all of a sudden, they turn a little bit, and they grab a leg, and they grab some leverage, and all of a sudden, Joey Diaz would go flying. And I'm 100 pounds heavier than the fucking black belt.
Yeah.
So I gave that a lot of respect, man. It's like they say this. It's, what's the guy's name from Married with Children?
You ever Ed O'Neill.
His jiu-jitsu story. That it was a neighbor or something, one of the Gracies.
Yeah, I don't know how he got it, but he's a black belt.
Right. He walked in there, and the guy goes, get on top of me. Ah, come on. I have no clothes on. Like, get on top of me. Get on top. Just get on top of me. Put your weight. Come on. Heavy, heavy, heavy. You ready? Yeah, blah, blah, blah. The guy's like, how'd you do that? Yeah. That's jiu-jitsu. And, but for some reason, I give that 10-year mark of jiu-jitsu, I give that a lot of credit. That's like a seal.
Like 10 years as a black belt or just 10 years of jiu-jitsu?
Just, I give 10 years as jiu-jitsu a lot. Yeah. Never mind when you have a black belt with some fucking coral stripes on it, and you've trained, and you know what? You do a lot. You talk a lot of shit about Nate Diaz. He's a little crazy and unorthodox. But if it's one thing, that kid knows his jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
Because they're gym rats. That's what they fucking do. I see that Alberto Cranes. That when I leave, there's 10 kids on the mat still. And they say, and if you come back at 4?
They'll still be there.
They'll still be there. And if you go back to the night class, they'll still be there.
And those kids will go after the biggest dudes, the guys
that's what they do.
Oh my God. They want to get beat up.
I go in there. They're like, come on, Joey, get on top of me. They pull guard on me. And I'm like, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah.
And I go to neon belly, and I hear them going, I hear your intestines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I hear your whole central nervous system going, and all of a sudden, they got me in a fucking single.
Yeah.
And I'm going backwards, man. And I love it. I fucking love it. So because of that, I give that specific. I give that specific discipline when you two guys are going to fight. I look at that and I give it a lot. And I also give the wrestling aspect because I know if he gets on top. But I can't lie to you. I lean to jiu-jitsu a little more because the last thing a wrestler wants to do is be on his back.
Right.
A jiu-jitsu guy lives on his fucking back. That's their fucking world, Jack.
Yeah, and if a wrestler, I mean... You know, the wrestler just has to worry about defending the submission. That's mainly what the wrestler has to worry about. But they normally have a good base, and it's much harder for the jiu-jitsu guy. If a guy like Cormier is on top of you, I mean, I thought Anderson, you know, moved his hips and protected himself very, very well. I mean, to me, he showed some of the best defensive guard I've ever seen in somebody. I mean, tell me anybody else, if they would have had Dan Cormier on top of them for 12 minutes, you know, tell me what they would have looked like.
Anthony Johnson didn't do well with Cormier.
No, no, he didn't.
Anthony Johnson didn't do well. That's a complete different fucking game. That's a complete different game. And I remember having this conversation at Houston's restaurant with Eddie Bravo. And Eddie Bravo telling me 10 years ago, and I knew nothing about nothing, Eddie Bravo telling me, look at something like GSP. These people better get ready. They better get good in their jiu-jitsu. They better get their rubber guard going. Because once these wrestlers, that's their world.
Yeah.
But if you get them on their back, it's a complete different fucking situation.
They're like a turtle on their back.
It's a complete different situation. I never really wrestled, so I don't know how that discipline works. But like I said to you, I look at jiu-jitsu when I look at the two fighters and you're going, Joey, before you said striking, I seen a lot of guys get knocked the fuck out to the jiu-jitsu guys. Great jiu-jitsu guys get knocked the fuck out. But I've also known that if a jiu-jitsu guy could weather a storm, you're fucking history.
Yeah.
And you lean an inch over.
Well, I mean, when you go back to the whole reason why the UFC was created was to prove that Gracie Jiu-Jitsu was the most efficient martial art in the world. And it was proven. Yeah, you could get caught by a punch. But, you know, when you look at the odds and they say whatever it is, 90% or 80% of the fights go to the ground. If you're going to go to the ground, you better know Jiu-Jitsu. And that was proof. And that's why, I mean, when the UFC was created by Jorge and Gracie, that's what it was for. It was to prove that Gracie Jiu-Jitsu was the most efficient martial art in the world. And I believe that was proven. You know, then they started realizing that they had to put time limits and all that. But in a street fight, there's no time limits. If they're in that, then that's why, you know, the UFC was created. It was never really, when you think about it, it was never created to be a sport. It was created to show that Gracie Jiu-Jitsu was the most efficient martial art in the world.
And they would just fucking tackle any of these guys. Big fucking black dudes. You should see it in the beginning.
I mean, you know.
When I first turned it on, I got to be honest with you, Ed. It wasn't for me.
Really?
It wasn't for me.
I liked it from the first one.
No, it was disgusting.
What are you talking about?
It was the worst thing I think I ever saw in my life. I'd rather go to Barnum and Bailey Circus than get the elephant get kicked.
I mean, I think the sport. I think the sport has improved, but I mean, I could remember how. I mean, the people tripped out on how many people wanted to watch it. You know, they tried to outlaw it, man. You know what I mean? You couldn't. When you think about what the UFC has done, man, what Dana and Lorenzo have done, I mean, it's absolutely incredible.
Oh no!
It started in 93. It was great. To think about like how far it's came in such a short amount of time. You know, people are, you know, sometimes I hear, you know, listen. Thank God that the UFC was in their hands, because at the end of the day, those guys were true fans of the sport. Lorenzo didn't, you know, he did it because he, of course, if it's a business, they're going to try to make money at it. But I'm just saying, in the beginning, there wasn't money. They were losing money. And they still wanted to see this sport grow. And to think that in 15 years, they got a sport that was basically illegal, legal in all 50 states, and be able to build what they build, it's like, it's pretty incredible to see how fast this sport has got, how quick it's gone in such a short amount of time.
It's sensational. You know, and I tell people all the time, I don't know how long, if it's, all right, so 93, you know what I'm doing in 93? I'm becoming a fucking comedian. All right, I'm becoming a comedian, but still at the same time, I came from the Bruce Lee era. I still remember Chinese Connection coming out in the movie theater. I still remember joining a kung fu school. I still remember running the streets with a fucking gi on, you know, with the whole karate class in New York City.
My God.
Oh, yeah, you know, I remember all this shit. So one day, yeah, I'm scrolling through the fucking channels in 1996 or something, and somebody says to me, you ever watch this UFC? And I'm looking at it, and I see a guy bigger than me with a wrestling suit on fighting a black dude with a karate suit on. And I'm like, no. It just looked like a fucking circus show to me at that time. I grew up in a time when once a year, Aaron something would do a promotion at Madison Square Garden, and it was 12 hours of martial arts, and it was every style, and people would fight and spar, but it was a couple kicks to the head. There was no wrestling. Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu was the farthest fucking thing from New York City at that time. There was a couple Brazilians, but nobody did fucking Jiu-Jitsu in New York. Mm. What's his name? Had to drive 4 hours when he first started Jiu-Jitsu.
Who?
Matt Serra.
That's her.
From Long Island to down to the Jersey Shore, because there was a guy there that taught on Sundays. On Sundays, he fucking taught.
That's crazy.
So you understand the growth of jiu-jitsu at the same time in the States. On Sundays, he would teach in Red Bank, New Jersey, and Matt Serra would take a fucking bus. And he goes, it sucked because you only trained for 3 hours. So it sucked to go all the way down there for four. And then fucking just train for three. We wanted to go for six, and then at least take the bus right home. You can sleep and shit, you know. Can you imagine that in the New York metropolitan area?
Well, you know, the cool thing is one time you got to have, you know, my business partner, George, on your podcast, because, you know, he moved here with Horry and Gracie in the late 70s to spread the word of jiu-jitsu and spread, you know, and some of the stories that George would tell me about those days of, like, you know, Horry and going to, you know, them going to seminars. And, you know, there'd be some kung fu seminar, and then, you know, they would sit through the whole seminar, and then at the end of the day, is there any questions, you know? And then Horian would, you know, George said, man, he'd see Horian raise his hand, and George would say, oh, shit, man, what's he going to do now? And then he'd go, hey, I have a question. What if somebody grabbed you like this? And he goes, well, what do you mean? He goes, well, let me show you. And then he'd grab the guy, and the guy couldn't get out of it. And then he goes, now grab me like that. And then you'd grab them, and then you'd, you know, get out of it, boom, and everyone would go, ah. And it was just so, like, genius when you think about it. I mean, that's like guerrilla marketing at its greatest. I mean, and then when you think about the whole challenge of the Gracie challenge of having people, I mean, that's why the UFC was created. I mean, it's actually, it's a pretty cool story. You know what I mean? It's pretty incredible. I was glad to see at UFC 200, Jorge and Gracie being in the crowd. You know what I mean? At the end of the day, it was his idea who created this. Granted, the sport today is much different than what he started. But at the end of the day, he was the guy that created the Ultimate Fighting Championship.
That's fucking amazing. No, I knew they did something like that. That was, which I think was brilliant. You know, I heard of the whole Redondo Beats takeover in the garage.
Oh man, it was on Van Horn Street. Yeah, it was on Van Horn Street, right in Redondo.
You know, and
it was crazy.
And now there's a jiu-jitsu school in Burbank on every four fucking blocks.
Yeah, it's
the jiu-jitsu school in North Hollywood on every eight blocks.
Yeah.
You know, it's growth.
And that's why sometimes, you know, people, you know, you can say whatever you want, but I feel that everybody that has a Brazilian jiu-jitsu school here in the United States, in a roundabout way, got to take their hat off and give, you know, Horian a thank you. You know what I mean? Because granted, each school has developed and they've taught different styles of jiu-jitsu or different techniques of jiu-jitsu. But at the end of the day, Horian Gracie was the guy who brought jiu-jitsu to America. And nobody knew about jiu-jitsu back then. And they started in the garage. And
Nobody knew.
I remember Hoist. I remember I was a nightclub promoter, and Hoist would show up at our clubs. And I would, you know, me being Brazilian, I grew up in the area, so I spoke Portuguese. So when the Brazilians would get here, I always, if I met them, you know, I was speaking Portuguese. And I can remember joking with Hoist saying, hey, man, that jiu-jitsu shit doesn't work around here. And he would just laugh, smile, and go, yeah, you know, just messing around. But he's always super nice guy. And the next thing you know, I see him fighting in the UFC. It was incredible. And the whole thing that why they, you know, all the different things of choosing Hoist. I mean, there was a family of killers. There was, you know, Hicks and you know, Hicks and, you know, yoked up, you know, bigger. And they chose Hoist to show that, you know, it's not about huge muscle and strength. I mean, look at it. You look at a guy like Hoist. He was what, 6'1", 170 pounds, 173 pounds back then. And just a lanky guy, you know, just seemed like any other guy walking down the street. And then they put him in the octagon with these huge animals, and Hoist comes out winning, you know, shows the efficiency of Gracie Jiu-Jitsu.
No, I was always impressed with it. I just didn't. At that time, I liked jiu-jitsu watching it. I didn't want to touch men's feet.
You didn't understand it.
No. I understood it. I don't want to touch men's feet.
I don't want your ass in my face.
Oh, I didn't want men sweating on me. You know, I grew up, like I told you, I came from Cuba, and 2 years later, there's Chinese guys beating up people at the fucking steakhouses. And then his biggest movie's coming out, and all of a sudden he dies. So I was a Bruce Lee fucking disciple.
Right.
I was a kung fu guy. Finally, I broke down because Fu Jiao Pai Kung Fu, there was too much mafia shit in there. So I went over with the Ishinru Karate guys because you couldn't do it no more. You had to wear a sash, and it was just too fucking much. I wanted to wear a gi and shit. So I went over there. But I was always a traditional karate guy. And I would go to this store called Honda. Martial arts supplies. This is when Black Belt in the fucking 70s. Black Belt Magazine, 1973. The biggest distributor for anything was Honda, and it was in Manhattan on like the 7th floor. And if you were 12 years old in those days, you go in there and come all over yourself.
You buy Flying Stars.
Stars, Tonfas, Kabuto, all those things that the cops carry now. They didn't carry them in the 70s. That was all martial arts shit. With the sticks, you get any gi you want, any association patch
you want. There wasn't like an 18-plus thing going on with the stars or the sticks?
Well, yeah, but you could always buy them, man. Or you make your own nunchucks. You used to get chains. You just get little thick dowels.
I told him. You get the eye hooks.
Yeah, you get the eye hooks.
You get the eye hooks.
Thick dowels.
You get the fucking broom handle. You chop the fucking wood.
Yeah, you measure. A broom handle. I would just go to the hardware store and get the dowels, you know, for the closet.
Yeah, the fucking closet dowels.
Yeah. You get those. You cut them in half, and then you just tape. You put some black tape on.
But then, like I said, when Corrado the Hong Kong Cat came out, he used to put copper on the bottom of his.
Oh, man.
So, you know, the plumbing, He took those copper things and put it on the end of his nunchuck. That was deep, because now, instead of people walking around with bruised heads, they walked around with stitches, because you would always knock the back of your head. When nunchucks came out, everybody went crazy. Everybody became retarded. I'm from the year of the nunchuck, where half of us are retarded because we hit ourselves with nunchucks practicing it. You would always hit your elbow, your funny bone. You have no fucking idea how it hurts. The first time you did that move to go between your legs,
you hit
that nut right here. This move here, Lee, bam, that little piece of wood would hit right here.
Always.
Your whole body would fucking rattle, okay? And then when you did this one down here, you would hit yourself one time because the stick would go with like a kettlebell. Like the kettlebell the first time. If you do a kettlebell, you don't know what you're doing. On the download, if it lifts up, boom, it hits your nutsack. Sorry about that, Mrs. Swartz, but you know what I'm saying? You know what's going on in this motherfucker. And then, seriously, dog, why would I fucking lie to you?
That would suck.
So all those nunchucks, but then there was a move, not this one, Ed Suarez. Which one was it? This one, when it would clock you right here. So you would get a bump right behind the fucking ear. You would hit your temple. Yeah. There was one of those moves you kept hitting behind your fucking ear, which isn't really your temple. I don't know what I'm talking about. Your temple.
But if you sometimes would go here, remember, and then it wrapped around the cage and then come back, sometimes if you didn't wrap it around, that's when it hit you.
Oh, my God, it hit you right in the fucking temple, right behind your ear there. You'd knock your balance off for a few minutes, but you'd stay out there in the sun like a retard swinging that fucking new chair.
Oh, man.
No. I was in my own world back then. And then I moved to L.A. In Seattle, somebody came to me and they go, "Hey, you watch the UFC?" I don't watch that shit. And I went somewhere to do comedy one night in one of those bars, and they had it on in the back room, like on a regular TV. It wasn't on big screens yet.
Right.
People weren't playing it on big screens at bars during college football.
No.
They were playing in the back. And I remember one day looking at it, and it looked like something I would see at a bar.
Yeah, but there was a little bit of that in the beginning. You know what I mean? It was no holds barred fighting. You know what I'm saying?
So I never liked it, Ed.
When did you start liking it?
I'm hanging out with Joe Rogan. They won't shut the fuck up. Then he brings another fucking Mexican dude, Eddie Bravo, and they won't shut the fuck up. If it's not jiu-jitsu, it's this fucking guy, it's this fucking guy, it's that fucking guy. I didn't want to hear it no more. And they would get mad at me. In those days, Joe wasn't on to do stage on comedy. He would fly in on Saturday mornings. Right. There was no big weigh-in in those days.
Right, right.
Joe would fly in on Saturdays, and he'd ask me every Friday night, "Dog, you want to come meet the UFC? I'll get you a free room." Why would I want to do that? Why would I want to go to fucking Vegas and see two savages fight each other? That's what I thought it was. I didn't think they told me it was some type of martial arts thing. Where's their geese? Where's their fucking headpiece? You know what I'm saying? I just thought it was a little too crazy. So they started talking shit about this fucking dude that was coming to the UFC. This dude named Anderson Silva. Joey, I know. I'm the type of guy, I don't like hearing shit. Don't keep telling me. Listen, I come to your house, you make broccoli, I don't fucking like it. I'm not going to eat it. I'll eat the meat. I'll eat the roast beef. I'll eat the Brazilian beef. Whatever the fuck you make, I'll eat. I'm not going to touch that broccoli. I don't give a fuck if you put garlic in it. I don't care if you grew it in your mother's yard organically. I'm not eating the fucking broccoli, so don't worry about it. Don't keep fucking asking me. Don't care. I know what I'm 53. I know what I fucking want. But one night, I lose the remote. You follow me? I lose the remote in the living room. I went to take a shower. I got cats. And I lost the fucking remote. And I was watching something on what was Spike.
It was his first fight against Liebman.
Up against Liebman. Whatever I was watching, whatever I came into the house, when I left.
Did you watch it live?
I watched it live.
Yeah, June 28th, 2006.
And all of a sudden, I see this shit and I go, what the fuck is that? And I waited, and I called Joe the next day, and I go, you got to talk to me about this fucking guy. That was amazing. He goes, I told you. I fucking told you. You love him. He's fucking perfect. That's what you always talk about. And when at the end, when he played the guitar and shit, I was like, oh, shit. And then I went online, and I fucking learned everything I could about him. That's, and then there was a Chuck Liddell fight that put me over the top. So it was always Chuck and Anderson for me, but it was always Anderson. You know, I met Anderson early on when I met you. Chuck, I didn't meet till years later.
Right.
I like Chuck also. I like
Chuck's a great guy.
I like Chuck's fighting stuff. I liked his background at that time, and to know that he was a wrestler, I liked him even more. And I liked his punching. I liked how accurate he was with that fucking punch. You know, Chuck had a great career also. I liked everything about those guys. I like how they acted. I liked that they were
martial artists.
They were martial artists. I liked that there was no insults traded. You know, listen, before a fight, absolutely, as a man, your adrenaline's up, your testosterone's up. You want to agitate the opponent. But I'm not going to go for 6 weeks before the fucking fight and try to insult you. Yeah. And I know it sells tickets, but in my world, it goes beyond something else. Fuck the tickets. We're still men at the end of the fucking week.
Right.
And that's why I still like their brashness. I'm an old school guy. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, I like Roberto Duran. I liked when he bumped into Sugar Ray Leonard's wife. And Sugar Ray Leonard tried to introduce his wife to him. He told him he was going to have his wife suck his dick. And that's how he won the first fight. I love all that shit. That's Anderson Silva simplified. You know, I always said that I didn't decide a fight till I went to the weigh-in. And nobody justified that for me more than Anderson Silva.
Which fight?
Especially the Vito Belfort fight.
Yeah.
Once he put the mask on, I went and bet Anderson Silva for $100. I didn't win much, but it didn't matter because I knew just from the psychological of the fucking weigh-in. Nothing made me go run down there. Listen, I'm not the guy that'll go to Vegas and try to lose money.
Right.
I got a wife to feed. I got a 3-year-old. So I don't go to Vegas to gamble, to lose money. Do you know when Conor McGregor lost a fight to me? At the weigh-in.
At the weigh-in,
how he acted when Nate went like this and he flinched.
Yeah.
Boom, I ran.
Yeah.
And then the second F factor was a jiu-jitsu black belt. But again, who he rolled with and who he got it with.
Right.
And I know how those guys train. I know how those guys train. And even if that left hook is phenomenal, even if he goes backwards, he's not going to get knocked out. And you might get a little over-anxious and lean over a little bit too much. And next thing you know, you go right back to Chael Sonnen against Anderson Silva.
Yeah. And especially when he's a guy coming up from, I mean, because technically, you know, he was giving it to Nate. But, you know, being a 145-pound guy moving up and fighting a guy who's been fighting at 155 and 170, you know, when you're 145 hitting those guys at 145 with those punches, it's different than hitting a guy at 170. You know what I'm saying? He absorbed a lot of punishment and was able to, make it through the storm. And then it wasn't so good for Connor after that.
Well, it was that jiu-jitsu.
Right.
Again, I love it. I make it such an...
But the punches were led to it because he got caught by a punch.
Right,
Got caught by a punch. So getting punched by a 170-pounder or even a 155-pounder, once again, changes changes the game a little bit. And then it kind of goes back to even why it was so impressive what Anderson was able to do fighting a guy that was 30 pounds heavier than him and still being able to do that.
I like in a way that they're doing that. I like that in a way that they're mixing and matching, that they open their mind to the weight classes in a way, because if you're a fan and you're really trying to learn what's going on, it really lets you know how these arts work, how those extra 10 pounds work.
Yeah.
In either direction. Listen, Conor could have knocked him out at any fucking time.
Totally.
And then it would have been he was 20 pounds lighter. Conor could have knocked him out. We saw him. He had him against the fucking ropes. The kid's eyeball was broken. You know the deal. Where's Tony Bennett? What happened? You forget about me? Lee's on fire tonight. Monday, July 18th. A beautiful summer night here in sunny California.
I want to be around to pick up the pieces when somebody breaks your heart. Somebody twice as smart.
We've got to do one more bomb.
Sure, why not? We're on two.
Let's see what we got left of it.
Jesus Christ.
It's a never ending pub on the home.
Will swear to be true as you used to do with me. Who'll leave you to learn?
Let me give some shout outs here real quick. Mario Fusca, happy birthday. The Ortegas, for 10 years now, we've been collaborating online. Susan Donovan Quinn, Jim Nunya, Andre Silva, Old Stock 87, my little Puerto Rican broad, Vanessa Borquez, and my man over on Facebook, Art Porn, you bad motherfuckers. This is crazy that Anderson Silva's managers in the fucking room. I love all this shit.
Like I was gonna say, no one knows more what Conor McGregor is going through, maybe than you, because Anderson was king of the UFC forever. And so, like, what when Conor's winning nonstop and he's flying around in mansions and private jets and stuff, like, how crazy does it get for him? Outside of just fighting, like, how many distractions do they have? Like, what is that life like?
Well, I mean, you know, I think Conor's rise was came much quicker than Anderson's. You know, Anderson's been in the business for a long time. And I know Conor's been fighting for a long time too, but you know, and Anderson was on top for a lot longer
right
time, you know what I mean? So Anderson, you know, it's really easy to say, you know, it's hard to say. People change sometimes, you know, but it's difficult. It's really easy to say, oh, I would never do that or I would never act that way. But at the end of the day, you really don't know what you'll act like until you're put in that position. Because if you're the baddest dude on the planet for 7 years and everyone's walking around saying, man, hey, champ, you're the greatest, you're the bad. I mean, eventually, you know, for 5-7 years, people's telling you that. Eventually, it could probably get to your head and you could say, you know what? Maybe I am. You know what I mean? I mean, we're only human. You know, it's really hard to say what you would do until you're in that position to see what you'd act like.
Lee, you're living at your mother's house. You're changing tires at fucking Firestone.
Okay.
From 7:30 to 3:00, they give you every other fucking Saturday if you're lucky. You know, you're living downstairs at your mother's house. Your dad gave you a fucking car to drive around in. You know what? But you watch this UFC and you want to bang it out with motherfuckers, you know? And all of a sudden you join some gym and you start fighting these amateur fights. And after 8 fights, Joe Silver bumps into you and you do the ultimate fucking fighter. And then you go on. And all those years, all those 2, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, all you know is training. All you know is training, and you still change tires at Firestone. All of a sudden, the fucking UFC calls you. And you have 6-7 fights. You start making a little money. And again, you've been training. All of a sudden, yeah, from time to time on Twitter, somebody will bother you and say, hey, can you give an interview on WPLJ? And you call and you giggle. And you're in your beginning stages of giving interviews. And all of a sudden, boom, you knock out Michael Bisping, I'm just saying, and you become the champion of the world. Your life changes. That training session you were going to go to on Tuesday for your foot after the fight to get surgery, that changed. They want to talk to you on Good Morning America. You're going to fucking New York. And on the flight to New York.
Right now, you're going
right now. When the fuck do you think you're going to go?
Yeah.
You're in Las Vegas. You had plans to go home the next day. You didn't know you were going to beat Holly Holm. You thought you were really going to beat fucking Ronda Rousey. She put her hand up, and Monday morning she was on fucking Good Morning America.
Yeah.
What do you think she got there? What do you think she got there? She had to go home, take a shower, get clothes, and then shoot to fucking New York. So she was going to go on Tuesday, regardless whether she won or lost. She was going to go to the doctor because she has a fucking toenail that's been bothering her. Plus, her back's been tweaking her before the fight, because after a training camp, there's always a fucking bumps and bruises. That all changes. Now every radio station in the fucking world wants to talk to you, Lee. Not in the country, in the world. They want to talk to you in China.
TV
stations.
They want
to talk to you in Australia. You just beat Ronda fucking Rousey. What do you think happens? So your life changes completely. Now you get home after 10 days, guess what? Every restaurant you ate at, you ate fucking dessert, Jack. Somebody picked up that tab. You know, what do you think happens? It's not that you get soft. It's exactly what happened.
It's
a fucking nightmare. Now you go back to train at the gym, but guess what? The UFC publicist just sent the fucking email. Every day this week, you got to do a fucking phone tour from 6 to 9. So you got to sit there by the phone and talk to fucking people. From 6 to 9, usually you're doing strength and conditioning.
And then when the UFC camera crews are there following you around.
And now you have all that shit. Now people with their fucking cameras. So when you get to the gym, there's 18 people outside with balloons. And you got to take a picture with fucking everybody. That's another 30 minutes that you didn't plan on.
And then if you don't, you're an asshole.
And then you had to pick your daughter up at school at 3:30. But now you walked into the gym at 1, but because there was 80 people there from some foundation, you got to fucking start training at 1:45. So that means you got a minute, an hour and 15 minutes to fucking train. Now when do you come back? Guess what you got to do at 7? You got to call into ESPN and talk to them and talk to some chick about what it feels like to be the champion and how your fucking life changed. And in the meantime, Dana White's throwing opponents at you. And you got, and your manager's calling you. And guess what? They want to sign you over at CAA. They have a project with fucking Patrick Swayze's lookalike. He's making a comeback from the grave. They want you to do fucking Roadhouse. You know, what the fuck do you think happens? What the fuck do you think happens? And then guess what happens now? That Nike throws you $10 million fucking dollars, American. You get a lawyer, they cut you a check for $4.2 fucking million after taxes are paid right off the bat. Guess what? Are you going to get up at 6 in the morning and jog on the beach like you used to?
Fuck no.
Okay, you're going to get a track monster and run at the fucking house with a mask on so you're up in high altitude. You're not going to work. You're going to work. You're going to work differently. You got to cut. You got to work more efficiently now. Or in your mind, you got to work more efficiently. You know what? Lee Syatt, the champion, Anderson Silva, don't like to get up early. He don't like to. He likes to get up at 10 and train from 1 to 6, go eat with his family, and come back to the camp. Guess what now? For a week prior to the fight, not only has he got to leave Brazil, but he's got to go to Las Vegas to do press all week at 6 a.m. So now that's the, what's the time difference? 82 fucking thousand hours.
Yeah, it depends.
You know, you become a fucking Martian.
Yeah.
You know, you have no idea, Lee, what the pressures are that take away from that main focus. And guess what? Your wife is pregnant with quintuplets. That fucking protein powder you drank. Not only did you not test positive, but whatever it had in it fucking spermed up your wife to have three kids. There's three kids in there right now formulating in that fucking womb. And you're in Las Vegas doing Jesus. You're doing sit-ups for Jesus. But your kids are getting fucking firm. You know what I'm saying? There's a thousand things going on in your mind that the person at home does not realize. And guess what? That person, that Anderson Silva, that Conor McGregor, that Nate Diaz, no matter what, it tolls on them. It tolls on you.
You're human, man. You have feelings. You know, sometimes people are so inconsiderate about what they say, too. They have no, at the end of the day, these guys are humans, you know, and sometimes people forget that.
Yeah, I mean, look, we're not really seeing long runs at a champion anymore. We've seen a lot of like one and done champions recently.
It's overwhelming. And this happens in every arena. You don't think this happened to Justin Bieber? You don't think this happens to a musician, a sports kid that came out of the ghetto? Nobody ever said two words to this fucking kid. Now he's the NBA's leading scorer. Now every fucking station in the world wants to talk to him. Remember every Sunday we used to play those summer league games in Redondo, that shitty court, but every Sunday you go over there, there's NBA stars playing over there. Now you can't go over there no more because they want you to be an analyst for something. All that shit changes you, man. and it takes away from a thing called hunger. Hunger is the hardest thing to maintain. That's why when you see an Anderson Silva, no matter what, you have to shake his hand because he maintained it for so long. People are training for you and you specifically. You have to hand it to GSP.
You become a target. Everyone's training to beat you. You know what I mean? You're the guy that everyone wants to beat, and it's there is a lot of pressure. There is a lot of pressure with that.
What happened this year in comedy? That poor girl. I don't know what happened. I'm not here to point a finger. That's not my world of comedy. But what happened to that girl that just did the Miller Lite commercial with that kid? What's that girl's name? Everybody accused her of stealing.
Oh, Amy Schumer?
Right. You don't think you need that in your career? In the middle of everything's going great, now four people want to get together and accuse you of fucking thieving. That throws you off. You know, everything comes back at you. The media is so fucking strong right now. And if you watch the Conor McGregor fight, when Conor McGregor's standing up, Joe Rogan goes, Conor better not stay out. Conor better stay offline for 2 days.
Yeah.
You know, can you imagine being a fighter and going online and reading an article by yourself?
It's horrible. I've never had an article written. I've never been a fighter. I've never fought in there. But reading the articles or reading what people say about fighters that I work with, where you have so much love and, you know, commitment invested into these guys, it offended me, and I'm not even the person that they're talking about. You know what I mean? So I could only imagine what it's like for the actual fighter to read it.
You think about Anderson? I'm sorry, Lee.
I was just gonna say, if I was a manager or even with major sport leagues, I would tell people not to have social media accounts. I don't see any.
But they have to.
But they have to.
They have to. The UFC will tell you. You're a champion. You got to have it. You have to communicate with the fans. You got to help sell the fights on social media. You have to. You have to be a part of it.
I mean, it is sports, but it is entertainment, and that create you have to build your brand, and having social media is such a huge part of an athlete or a celebrity's brand now that it's just part of it, man. It's just you gotta learn to balance it all, and that's why it is a little bit.
It's part of it, and that's true, but it's so dangerous for them that at a certain point, it must outweigh the risks. Although I haven't seen a lot of UFC fighters get in trouble on Twitter. Unless maybe I just don't see it, but
you always attract a twit statement, you know, because big brother's watching, as they say.
Right.
Big brother's fucking monitoring that shit, okay? That's what's going on. You know, you think if you sign on a TV show for NBC, if you go on there and say, suck my dick shorty, you're not going to get a fucking memo from the vice president? By the time you get to your fucking thing, they're going to come to you and go, you say, suck my dick, Hillary, on Twitter today? Yes, I did. You know, right now, CNN, ABC, TMZ, Johnny Fonzoo, they're all on the fucking phone. They want to talk to you about your statement. You know, it's dangerous, yeah. It comes back to bite you in the ass. But what are you going to do? They also want you to have it. They also require you to have it. Listen, when you walk on a set now to shoot any major TV show, they give you paperwork. And that paperwork is what you're going to make, who they're sending the check to, what size your neck is, who the emergency contact is if you get stabbed on the fucking set, you know, particulars. But the last sheet, in layman's terms, it's we don't want to be on fucking social media. Everything needs to be approved to get on social media. You can't take pictures of the set on social media. Blah, 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 blah. But then in a little paragraph behind it, when you read it, it's like two sentences that are saying, wink, wink. Like, do what you have to do.
Well, I mean, I get...
So if you're fucking Lee Syatt and you're on a certain episode with Brad fucking Pitt, that's a guest star, and Brad Pitt's right fucking there, and you take a selfie... Meanwhile, you got 500,000 fucking people on your Twitter. And you take a picture of Brad Pitt and you like this. They're really going to get mad at you? You following what I'm trying to say to you? it's like a fucking contract that says, we don't want you on social media and we don't want you posting pictures of the set on social media. But if it's a good picture, we'll turn around and look the other way.
If you have over 10,000 followers.
Yeah, that's what they're telling you. So it's fucking crazy. So, hey, listen, you have to have social media.
Yeah.
You're going to say you're young, you're stupid. Somebody throws a jab at you at social media. You're a fighter. You're filled with testosterone. You got a girlfriend. She's got a Twitter. You got to answer something back. What do you think happened with Biggie and fucking Tupac?
It was a Twitter beef.
Okay, what happened to fucking, what happened with Ice Cube?
Twitter.
What happened with Ice Cube and fucking, and then WA when he left?
MySpace feud.
They started having a fucking feud about music. You know what I'm saying? It's the same thing, only now.
It's on Twitter.
It's on Twitter and Facebook. Yeah. As far as I know, you got to drive back. I'll let you go if you got to go. I'm just going to close up the show. I'm happy you came on tonight.
Hey, thanks, man. Thanks.
Thank you for being the manager of the decade, for handling the fighter of the decade in my eyes. The last performance was just great.
It was awesome.
For a minute there, I'm like, he might have this motherfucker. Everything changes.
Yeah.
Everything changes.
Until the last 10 seconds, you know, I thought at any moment he could, he could get an opportunity to finish the fight. And I still believe that.
You know, I wish somebody makes a, like, I'm sitting there going, what if fucking Anderson Silva sweeps him and submits him with some Brazilian something fucking crazy that nobody's ever seen? In the back of my mind, I'm thinking that I'm watching this fight and I'm thinking to myself, seeing, like, one of the Fertittas sitting down and somebody just backhanding them saying, what were you thinking?
And even that elbow he tried to throw, if he would have landed that elbow, it would have been like another one of those Fricklands.
You know, it's really weird, the fights that they try to sell you and the fights that you want to see and the fights that you really, like, I couldn't wait to see Dos Anjos Alvarez. Yeah. I knew, to me, that was the fight of the year. I had been waiting for that fight since they tweeted it. I was like, that's me all the way. I'm not even doing comedy that night. I don't give a fuck. I'm not taping it. I'm watching that fucking fight, you know? I don't even know what I was going to tell you. I'm telling you, these stars are tremendous. If you want to do a weekend getaway, these stars, this will forget your fucking memory altogether.
Well, thanks for having me, Joey.
Thank you, brother, for coming on. Thank you for making it. Always a pleasure seeing you.
Yes.
All luck in the world with Anderson, the rest of your stable and shit like that. And when you see my boy, send him my love. Tell him I think about him all the time. He's a great fighter.
Will do, will do.
Stay black, my brother.
All right, my man.
Let me just read it. Let me get the fucking thing there. You're looking at me like you don't know nothing. Look at you tonight. You got to stop this shit, Lee. You got to stop coming here early. You know what I'm doing tomorrow, Lee? I'm doing two things. I'm doing the Tom Rhodes podcast. But before I do the Tom Rhodes podcast, I'm doing something that I don't like doing, but I got to do it anyway. I'm going down to Indochino in Beverly Hills to get suited for one of their suits, and I'm going to wear it on this special.
Nice.
I don't know if you guys know much about Indochino. Let me explain something to you. If you go to fucking Hollywood on the outlet there, there's those places that you go and you buy like three Armenian suits for $199. They give you socks, a shirt, a belt, and a tie, but you can't sit around people because if somebody's smoking a cigarette, your suit will just disintegrate right there. It's those fucking polyester suits you can't. And I'll tell you, they're great all-purpose suits. But you want to look good and you want to feel good. And to know that you have a nice, nice suit on is a great fucking feeling in the world, okay? Indochino is reinventing men's fashion. And made to measure the suit is the best suit you'll ever own. So suit up. Get a one-of-a-kind, made-to-measure suit, okay? Customize the details you want. You pick the lining, the lapels, the personal monograms, and more. 14 unique measurements go into making a suit that fits you perfectly. You can't go wrong with the well-crafted 100% merino wool suit right there. People can smoke around you. You feel confident. You understand me? Also, check out their made-to-measure dress shirts and men's accessories. Money-back guarantee, all right? These are suits, people. Listen, we live in a new age no more. Who's got time to go downtown, get measured by a Chinese dude, pick the linen, get the suit, park, walk, be risked to getting mugged, go back down? Now, that shit's ended. You go to a local store, you get measured, you pick the suit, everything goes on file. Every time you want a suit, you put your fucking number in, and guess what? They deliver it to your door. Nobody has to leave the house. You understand me? Like a fucking doctor. Just in case of ISIS invades, you don't have to get rid of another suit. Anyway, I'm talking to you about Indochino. Today, my listeners get any premium suit for just $399. That's up to 50% off. You're looking good. You're looking sharp. If you go to court, if you got to go to a funeral, if you got to go to a wedding, you walk in there with an Indochino suit. Who's better than you?
Huh? No one.
Nobody. Tell them, Lisa, yeah. So what I'm going to do is this. Do me a favor. Go to Indochino.com. Enter church at checkout. And I'll tell you what else I'm going to do. Shipping is gratis, free. There's no reason not to try your first custom-made suit with a deal this good, okay? And I tell you, I used to get deals this good, but the suits would never fit me because they were stolen. So you don't know what you get. You got to go take it to a tailor. This is fucking customized. All 14 unique measurements go into making a suit. Listen to what I'm saying to you. Go to Indochino.com. Enter the promo code CHURCH. C-H-U-C... hold on. CHURCH. C-H-U-R-C-H. For any premium suit for just $399 and free shipping. Right to your door, okay? There's no reason not to try your first custom-made suit with a deal this good and a suit classic from their premium collection. You'll look good. You'll feel good. You'll be smoking. You walk in a room, women will look at you and say, look at that fucking savage of death. So do me a favor. Go to Indochino.com. Right now, Indochino.com. Take a look at the whole thing, how it works. You're going to fucking love it. When you buy the suit, press in church. C-H-U-R-C-H. You're getting the suit for 399 beans. That's 50% off. Go to Indochino suit right now. Listen, you're sitting there like a fucking Momo. Your balls are itching. You know, you don't know what the fuck to do with your life. Your feet are itchy. Your balls are itchy. It's hot. You look down. Your underwear are fucking disgusting, okay? There's no reason to sit around like an animal no more with disgusting underwear. You're sitting there thinking to yourself, why don't I have a woman? Why doesn't nobody hit me back from Match.com? Because your underwear is disgusting. You live in 2006. Your underwear got to look sharp. Am I lying to you, Ed Suarez? Fuck no, I'm not lying to you, all right? Whether you're wearing a suit or sweats, you spend 24 hours a day in your underwear. But instead of making a statement looking good like Superman's tight under his everyday clothes, your undergear is probably boring. MeUndies is here to change that. Number one, MeUndies are the most comfortable underwear in the world. Why, Joey? Because they're made with Modal. M-O-H-D-A-L. It's a source Modal, a fabric that's twice as soft as cotton. Nothing can describe the fit and feel of MeUndies. Once you try them, you'll wear them and understand why they're called the world's most comfortable underwear. When I go to jiu-jitsu, I wear MeUndies. Why? Because it keeps everything dry, keeps the moisture, it keeps your balls tucked, you don't have to wear a shield, you know what I'm saying? That's what MeUndies does. Sorry about that, Ms. Suarez, you know what I mean? Anyway, and if you don't like your first pair of MeUndies, boom, they're free, no questions asked. MeUndies has dozens of styles and limited edition prints to help you make a statement with your underwear, whether anyone can see them or not. Remember Superman? Listen, you know me, I've been with these guys for a long time. Why? Because their underwear are fucking tremendous. I'm a fat fuck, and they make me feel nice, lean, beautiful, athletic. Don't take it from me. I'm telling you, keeps your nutsack dry. They got plenty of styles, and every month they come out with new styles. You're going to love it. But do me a favor. Shipping is free in the U.S. and Canada, and I'll save you up to $8 a pair with a MeUndies subscription plan. Get the subscription plan or a single pair. Get 20% off your first order when you go to MeUndies.com/Joey. Either get 20% off your first order and I'll save you up to $8 a pair on the MeUndies subscription plan. But it all starts with going to that's MeUndies.com/Joey for 20% off your first order. MeUndies.com/Joey. That's it, guys. It's over. What do you want from me? I got Lee Syatt looking at me like he owes me $20. I got Ed Suarez looking at me all weird. Mrs. S is looking good. That's it. It's over. I'll see you motherfuckers Wednesday.
On it.
On it tonight. That's right. Always remember, go to onit.com right now and press in.
Church.
And get 10% off the tremendous supply of minerals. Don't forget, Thursday night, I'm at the motherfucking Yoo-Hoo Room doing my first night of the No Expectations Tour. I'm working on my special. I don't know what the fuck we're going to talk about. Get high, come down, eat some wings, and take a ride. Stay black. See you guys tomorrow. No, Wednesday.
This show was brought to you by MeUndies. Go to MeUndies.com/Joey right now to get 20% off of your first order. And don't forget, shipping is always free in the United States and Canada. Go to MeUndies.com/Joey right now to get 20% off of your first order. And if you sign up for the MeUndies subscription plan, you could save $8 a pair. That's MeUndies.com/Joey. The show is also brought to you by Indochino. Indochino is changing men's fashion. And matter of fact, they're reinventing men's fashion. And they have a deal that's too good to pass up. There's no reason not to try your first custom-made suit. Go to Indochino.com and enter promo code CHURCH when you check out, and you're going to get any premium suit for just $3.99. That's up to 50% off. Indochino.com, use promo code CHURCH at checkout, and go to Onnit.com and use code word CHURCH to save 10% on all of their amazing optimization products like Alpha Brain, Numu, TrimTech Immune, and TrimTech Sport.